Blog Talk Radio.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
So there. That wasn't the clip I thought it was going to be, but that is illustrative of my usual luck using the sound clips there. Those are all left there by Chief Iggy. He's the one who does the work on the studio that the studio set up that blogtalkradio.com gives us. He works on all that stuff, and the rest of us kind of push the buttons. So thank you to Chief Iggy, although it was entitled Obi-Wan, the Force, and I thought it was going to be that one where he talks about what the Force is. You know, it surrounds us, it binds us, it holds the universe together, but it wasn't that one. Also, that one I was just talking about is just before he tells that epic collection of lies to Luke Skywalker. Your father was killed by Darth Vader when he actually is Darth Vader. And it's like, whenever I listen to that, I'm like, liar, liar, pants on fire. Why are you just telling all those fibs to that kid? But of course, it's necessary because the plot won't work without it. But anyway, I am Mudto Sasquatch. This is my radio program, The Uncommon Shaman. And this is just one of those shows that seems to come along about every other week for me when I'm kind of struggling for what I'm going to. I feel like I have a good idea about what I want to talk about, and then I realize it's going to take me about 5 minutes to talk about that, and then the rest of the time in the show I'm going to be kind of floundering for something to say. But sometimes that's where the best shows come from, and sometimes it's not quite where the best shows come from, but that's neither here nor there. I'm stuck with it now, so let's go with it. I've entitled today's show False Flags, and a false flag incident is, as you probably know, when something is sort of set up or staged to make you think maybe one group of people has done it when, in fact, someone else has done it. This is a famous example, I guess, would be the Sandy Hook school shooting, where there are many people who say the government set that up so that they could get stronger gun control laws on the books. The 9/11 was an inside job and all that. Actually, what I want to talk about doesn't have a whole lot to do with that. It's just I, for some reason, that title came into my head when I was making up the advertisement is the right word. We have to go in on Blog Talk and set up the show, and we give it a title, and that's the title I gave it. And then as I got thinking about it later during the day, I thought, well, I'm not really going to be talking about false flags. That's something else. But let me tell you what I'm really talking about more is more about. It's about fraud, about just generally people lying to people just for their own advantage and for no other reason. There's some might talk about the possibility of having justifiable lying, the way Obi-Wan did in that movie. He had to lie to him because he couldn't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth, Luke. But and I don't know that I buy that. That there is such a thing as justifiable lying, but there is, it is distinct from lying that you just do to aggrandize yourself or to get or to gain some sort of advantage. I can't possibly think of an example where that might be going on in our society today, at this very moment, dominating our news cycle. But in any case, I don't want to talk about that. I swore a blood oath that I wasn't going to talk about the presidential election until after it was over, and I'm going to stick to it. I'm not going to call that kind of dark energy into my life at this point. What I did want to talk about was, I guess fraud would be a good, fraud and lying would be fraud more than lying. The fraud, I guess, is a more organized form of lying, perhaps more purposeful form. Let me tell you what happened yesterday. We got a call. Actually, my mother got a call, ostensibly from my daughter, who said that she was in Las Vegas and she had had a car accident. She had done a lot of damage to someone else's car, and she had also been, she'd had a glass of wine and had been tested, you know, positive for the alcohol over the limit. So the police had taken her to the a holding area, and she needed $10,000 to get out of this situation. And said that the car that she hit was very expensive, and it was something like 10% of the value of the car was what she needed to bail herself out. And then return home. They were going to prevent her from returning home. And she told my mother that she gave my mother a name, this attorney she was supposed to call in Las Vegas. So my mother called the attorney, and the attorney couldn't answer right away. It was talking to somebody else. So she's sitting and stewing, and this is after this has happened is when I arrived, and my father was there as well, and we're all figuring out, you know, what are we going to do about this. And between all of us, you know, mom was the one that I talked to her, and she started coming up with these things that didn't seem right to her. You know, about what was the $10,000 about? You know, how could that be bond if she hadn't been in front of a judge? And, you know, why would that? Why would the bond have anything to do with how much the car was worth? And there's just a number of things that didn't seem right about it. Chief of which would be, why would my daughter be in Las Vegas if she's a single mother? It's in the middle of the work week. Why would she be in Las Vegas, particularly since, you know, when she does take trips, which isn't very often, but when she does, she tells us because, you know, she needs people to watch her daughter, my granddaughter. So we began this this search via phone and internet to see if we could figure out where my daughter actually was, and we found out she was still right here in the Midwest. You know, had not ventured to Vegas at all. The whole thing was a fake. And someone who, this is the scary part. This was someone who knew my daughter's name, knew that my mother was her grandmother, and had the phone number she could be reached, and was able to sound enough like her to just pass it. She said, Mom said she was crying. You know, she was very upset. She had acted the part to you to the fullest. But I mean, that's scary that someone could have that kind of information about you, be able to make those connections. So we called, my mother called the police, and they said this is actually a very popular scam that's worked on older people, and they get this information, you know, however they get it, and then they call pretending to be the grandchild who's in trouble and referring them to an attorney who talks the older people out of however much money they can talk them out of. Now, we never did get as far as the fake attorney part of it, but we certainly did, my mother at least did experience you know, this very convincing fraud that you know, an attempt to relieve her of a large chunk of money. And so this is a very unsettling experience, obviously, for all of us. I'm going to throw in one thing here, and then I'm going to kind of, maybe I'll come back to it later, I don't know, but my mother's upset because, you know, what is she doing in Vegas and all that, because she's not, we don't know that at that point, but, you know, she didn't really go to Vegas, but Mom is upset because, you know, why did she go to Vegas, and how, you know, she has a baby to take care of and all that. My father is very inscrutable. You can't really tell, you know, how he might be feeling in any situation. And I'm upset because my mother is going to have to be the one that helps her. You know, she didn't call, you know, Brenda didn't call me. She called, excuse me, I used my daughter's name there. She didn't call me, she called my mother because she knew I don't have the financial means to help. But my mother does. Now, as it turns out, the scam is being worked on older people. That's why, and they had the older people's address, my parents' address. That's why I wasn't called. But it touched a nerve in me. You know, I'm not the one. You know, I'm not the one who got the call. I know why I'm not the one who got the call, because I'm not the one who could help. So I mean, that's a completely different issue. Outside, I guess maybe that speaks to the sort of emotions, I guess, that can be touched by fraud, that the fraudsters don't want. I mean, I don't imagine the fraudsters care too much about that. They just they're trying to get the money. They're trying to find somebody who will, you know, I'm sure the next step would have been that we would have to wire money to this attorney to get her out of jail, which is according, and I think by that point, we would have said, no, this, there's something wrong with this. I'm sure my mother would have cottoned to it anyway, as much reality television as she watches. But that's not, I mean, you're going to, I mean, if you're going to be wiring money to somebody, you're probably going to be, I would be wiring it, make sure we'd be wiring it to the police or to somebody, not to some lawyer we never heard of. I would certainly want to hear from my daughter again before, you know, anything happened, but where was I going like with that? I would say, oh, well, I guess it was maybe to close the loop on that thought. I don't know, but it got me to thinking, you know, first of all, you know, I already went through that first piece about how it affected me. I started thinking about, I was wondering about the person on the other end of that phone. Who is that person? How do you find yourself in that job, you know, trying to, old people that you're someone that they care about and trying to, you know, relieve them of that cash. And how do you, I mean, this is going to sound melodramatic, but how do you sleep at night knowing that that's the way you're making your bread? And I didn't mean that like in 70s kind of making your bread, man. I just meant like making your food, but that kind of, I guess that must be where that comes from. But energetically, what does that say about not just where those people are, but where we are as a society? I mean, that exists, and that there's nothing we could do about it. I mean, that's what the police told us. There's really nothing you can do about it. You can't trace down any of the phone numbers. They'll just change their phone numbers after a very short time, and there's nothing, and they're probably using cell phones anyway. I believe we looked it up. The area code that we received the call from was not, it wasn't an area code. It's just a group of three numbers. It could be I just thought of this now. It could also be a foreign area code. But in any case, there wasn't anything that could be done about tracing the calls or whatnot. So obviously people have put a lot of study into this and have things very well worked out to where they can get this job done without any repercussions to themselves. So where does that... Okay, now this is the part of the game. Getting about halfway through the show, this is the part where we begin to just seem that Mudtoe has not really planned this out very well at all. I was really hoping at some point inspiration would hit, and it really hasn't yet. Okay, let's just do something really broad. Where does the instinct to steal from people come from? I mean, where does the idea to steal from people come from? Why does... I guess maybe the better question is, where does the idea not to steal come from? Because if we believe that morality is taught, if we believe at least that ethics are taught, I believe that morality is inborn, but ethics are taught. So is stealing a question of morality, or is it a question of ethics? I mean, in our reptilian brain, it's just we get the food however we can get it. If we got to snatch it from somebody else, that's, you know that fair problem, you know, survival of the fittest and the strongest survive and all of that. But if we believe, you know, in this society that we have grown beyond that, and sometimes I don't quite believe that. Sometimes I see that there's a lot of that reptilian stuff still going on. By that, I don't mean the alien reptilian stuff. I think I'm just saying that that part of our brain that is that works purely on instinct, that drives I think drives things like murder. It's just the fear, that the primitive fear rises to the point where we have to extinguish the thing that's making us afraid. This is where murder comes from. But it's not as clear cut to me where even something as simple as larceny comes from, just plain flat out stealing, just a snatch and grab, let alone something as complex, something requiring as much planning and skill as fraud, as calling somebody up on the phone and trying to fool them. Something that requires and the will to apply that talent toward the end of taking something away from someone else. Where does that come from? Is it fair to say that comes from our reptilian brain, from our inborn instinct to survive, no matter how we have to do it? Or is it from some twisted form of ethics or a lack of ethics? Something in the human equation, something in the code that one either got wrong or is ignoring. Or is it simpler than that? Is it just because it's easier? There are a number of good lines from movies about bad things being done because they're easier. This is from one. This one is from Star Trek. Which planet are they on? They're in some place and it's a very simple, peaceful planet, and they get there, and everybody's got guns. Where did the guns come from? Well, of course, just the Klingons have gone out and are giving them guns to try and screw everything up. And the Klingon's talking to his contact on the planet, and he says, not the Klingon, the other guy, he says, I thought my people would get tired of killing, but you were right. It's easier, and it has pleasures. So is there something dark that's being appealed to? Because they're going to, that person who called my mother probably wasn't the person who's at the top of the food chain. The person, the faux lawyer, probably a more likely candidate, but might not have been at the top of the food chain either. So now we introduce the elements of conspiracy. Not just one person deciding to shit on the social contract, but a number of them getting together and plotting how they might do it. And maybe even, I imagine, a meeting that they have. they go to the green room and they have a meeting about how they critique. Maybe you should have told her this. And I wonder if they record like phone calls. And they'll go over them later and say, maybe if you tried this or done that, it would have worked out better. And you're building their skills, you understand. And then they can all go like to the big conference, and they can I feel a story coming out of this. They go to the conference, the American Fraud Association. National conference. Oh, I'm tickling myself today. I'm President. Listen, if you were going to the meeting of the American Fraud Association, how would you know? It could all be a ruse, right? You could be going to the wrong. There might not be actually be anything at that hotel. you could get there and there wouldn't actually be any reservations. Someone may have taken all that money and there wouldn't be any. And the dinner, you get to the dinner, what dinner? There isn't any dinner here today. Oh, they got us again. Get that damn American Fraud Association on the phone. Oh, that's not, it's a cell phone. They changed their number. Oh, shoot. Well, anyway. Oh, fraud. There have been times. There have been times when seriously I've thought I should just be a fraudster. I don't know that I could ever actually do it. I don't know that I could ever pull it off, but something in me, I hope something in me would stop me. But, boy, you could talk people out of the money. Then you've got your own worries sort of tranquilized, you know. And you have maybe you have the comfort, it might not make any difference to you, but maybe you have the comfort of knowing, hey, they probably, they had the money, they could spare the money anyway. And what are they saving it up for? What was the name of this? I can't remember. There's a movie about guys selling vacuum cleaners door to door. And they're like supreme hucksters. And the one gave the excuse. He said the only ones, because they'd lie to get people to buy the Electric Kings. They called them Electric Kings. And he said the only ones who ever get taken are the greedy ones. And I read that in connection with Madoff. Was that a lot of people who were in with him presumed the way he was making all this money was that he was cheating, because he owned a firm that sold stocks. They took the orders from the customers and went to the exchange and sold them. One of those guys down there on the floor going 22, 22, whatever. But then he also had this separately was this trust fund that he had. And they said that people, and you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do both things because it's a conflict of interest. And so that a lot of people who invested very heavily with him just assumed that he was doing that for his benefit. And he would know when a very large order was coming in to be executed on the trading floor, and then he would adjust his trust fund accordingly to take advantage of that, which is it's insider trading. It's against the law. Now, it's not what he was doing. He was running a Ponzi scheme. But the people who invested a lot of money with him assumed that that's what he was doing and they wanted to be in on it. So maybe I don't think it's karma. People loosely use the word karma to refer to those kind of situations. I don't think the word actually applies, but whatever you want to call it, there's some form of justice occurring when those people who had assumed he was breaking the law and invested with him anyway because he was making a lot of money, and then they lost all their money because their assumption was wrong. He was doing something completely different. And then you think about karma, it's going to come, what goes around comes around, and justice will come to them, and that won't. I mean, justice is going to come to them unless they make a mistake. And even then, it probably won't. And in a sense, is being a fraudster any worse than being a disreputable car dealer or a disreputable insurance salesman? It's taking money for selling people things that they don't need. I guess if you take somebody's last dollar. Well, let me put it this way: if you take somebody's last dollar, is that worse than taking, say, their first dollar? I mean, you take somebody and you wipe them out. Does that make it the crime worse than if they have had plenty of money and can afford to lose it? I don't know. What do you think? Because this is now. Let me get into some more controversial territory here, and then I'll back off because I don't like to. I like to save those. Actually, I don't do it at all anymore. I used to get into more trouble on Facebook than I do now. But I don't see. I mean, we're getting a lot of things about the rioters and police shootings and whatnot. And there's someone who, that we ought to bring back the death penalty for these people and those people or whatever. A lot of places still have a death penalty. I think Ohio, but whatever. I don't understand why killing somebody because you hate them or killing somebody because they're a police officer is worse than killing them for some other reason. I think if you kill somebody, the penalty should be the same. The reason that you killed them, I mean, unless you're talking about self-defense, which is another thing, but if you just murdered somebody, I don't see how the reason that you murdered them makes any difference. I think the laws, you think of, well, these laws are going to deter, and I don't know how much. I mean, I don't think that the statistical record has ever borne that out, that making the penalties worse deters a certain crime. I think if you get into your head that you're going to do it, you do it, and you figure that your skill. I mean, bank robbery is you're really bucking the odds when you decide to rob a bank. I think I saw that it was like something like some absurdly high percentage, like 78% of people who rob banks get caught the first time they do it. I mean, it's not a high percentage of success, but people still do it, and perhaps because one might argue they're unaware of that. Well, it's because they've gotten them in their mind that they can do it, that they will be successful, and they've got that American go for it experience. What was I going to say? The American go for it spirit. That's what I was going to say. And they do it. Lots of crime. Lots of taking things. I mean, one of the basic principles is don't take anything that isn't freely offered. I think that may be the one that's most often ignored. I think other people would jump on never have inappropriate sexual relations. That depends a lot on what you decide. This is the Buddhist thing I'm referring to, is the things that you just the way you're supposed to live your life. It's the six something or others. I don't know, everything in Buddhism has a number like that. The four whatevers and the five something or others. This is the seven something or others about how you're supposed to live. And one of them is you don't take anything that's not freely offered. Another one is that you don't have inappropriate sexual relations. Without going into very much detail about what inappropriate means, I would think under most reasonable or at least average definitions of inappropriate, I would think you'd probably taking things that don't belong to you would probably be the bigger problem. I mean, things that will affect more people. Or maybe not. I don't know. I haven't really done the study. We are drawing to the end of our time together. Wouldn't have believed I could have made it on this topic, but boy, I did. I'm starting to get pretty proficient at this. Maybe I won't have to become a fraudster after all. I do appreciate your visiting me in this way and listening to my words and putting up with me. And I hope you will join me again next week. Until then, have a pleasant good evening.